Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
To another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a quick intro, then we're going to build a deck for the new First Snow meta. We'll have a tip of the week, some closing comments, and a few mountain jokes.
All right, John, this is episode 10, and if last week is any indication, Mondays have now become Podcast Mondays.
Yeah, I think it'll be three or four podcasts coming out. Should we change our day, Alex?
What? We got here first. Why should we have to change? We were Mondays first. But what, last week there was Great Beards of Westeros hosting at about the same time as we did. There's the new Jon Snow You Know Nothing Australian podcast. And Banter missed their day and therefore posted on Monday due to some recording issues. So yeah, it was a four podcast Monday. It was that's crazy.
It seems to be the standard these days too. There's so many podcasts and so many channels, which is great.
Is this the bit where you tell me you're on another podcast?
I'm not on another podcast.
Someone claimed you were on another podcast. Buzz Aldrin posted and said you were on another podcast.
That's not a podcast. That's like a stream of consciousness. And it's like, you know, if I'm around, we're going to do that. And if not, then I won't be on.
So at least tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Sure, I guess. I don't know much about it.
Oh, I see.
Buzz and Roy randomly talking about whatever we feel like. That's it.
And this is Wednesday's live streams?
Yep. That's my understanding. Tuesdays, I think, actually.
But we're recording on Tuesday. We're recording this week on Tuesday. You remember that, right?
Yes.
All right, good. Okay, all right.
I'm really not worried about this other thing. It's not super serious there, Alex.
You're one of the worst promotional. I give you this opportunity here on our cast. I give you out of the generosity of my own.
I want to promote it. You wanted to promote it.
Well, I wanted to knock it while you promoted it.
Oh, well, it's going to be tough to do when I'm the one knocking it.
It has been a pretty big week for spoilers from FFG through a whole bunch of other different casts, although at this point the entire Wolves box has been spoiled as the Italians have gotten their hands on their box. And in fact, so have I, but that's not particularly relevant because by the time people listen to this, CardGameDB will be getting the spoilers up on Monday anyway, so I don't really need to re-spoil the cards. I will comment, though, I did post a picture of the box on our Facebook group on April Fool's, but it is the actual box, and it's sort of that, how would I describe it? It's not the opens from the top box that we're used to from the core or from previous deluxes or the Lord of the Rings deluxes or the Conquest one that came
with the side ones.
It is. It's the cheaper. It's sort of like the same cardboard as is used in the old chapter packs, folded in such a way as to make a box and then reinforced inside with some folded cardboard. So to me, it's not a big deal, but when you first hold it, it feels cheap. And, you know, again, I wasn't using the boxes for storage. I know some people do. This doesn't really bother me. But when you hold that brand new product and you're like, hold on a second, you know, that is a bit of a shame.
Well, I'm sure it's cheaper for FFG. They could make more money, which means they can make more product for us.
We'll buy anything they put out.
Yeah, we would. We're pretty bad. Speaking of which, as we start to near this, you know, the end of this cycle, do you think they're going to continue right with the next cycle? Or do you think they're going to have a break in the old, you know, I say the olden days, in 1.0, there used to be a 1 to 3 month break, depending on, I don't know what, randomness was going on at FFG between cycles. You think that's going to be the case again coming up?
The optimist in me says that they know that they have to get the Thrones card pool big faster than the other games, not because it's more important, but because it's coming from a larger card pool more recently, and we have different expectations. And, you know, they keep learning, and in theory, they're getting better. The deluxe process has been faster. So all this optimism in me says that. And yet, I said that for pretty much every cycle in first edition. And I said, oh, they'll have gotten it better this time. There won't be as big a delay. So honestly, no, I think there's going to be a delay. I would expect at least 2 months.
That's what I think.
Between CP6 and CP1. Yeah.
Does that mean for Gen Con we might have one pack from the new cycle, which would be interesting?
We'd expect April to be CP5, May CP6, and then July could well have the first.
Yeah. End of July kind of thing, possibly.
Yeah, possibly. Or, I mean, maybe they'll just have it for the Gen Con, and it won't be legal for Gen Con. It might be their Gen Con release, yeah, as well, the first CP of the new cycle. They've actually given us more spoilers. We'll jump back to Wolves in a second, but since you mentioned the second cycle, they gave us spoilers for the second pack, and they did not skimp out on the spoilers here. They gave us two agendas.
Yeah, summer and winter is back.
And unlike before, it's not the White Ravens. It's entirely plot-based, and it's a question of how many plots you can dedicate to wanting your effect, your choke effect, or your resource glut effect, versus how many of the opposite type your opponent is playing, regardless of whether they're playing Kings of Summer or Kings of Winter. So it feels less binary than the first edition ones. Yeah. Like, even when they match up, it's not Kings of Winter automatically wins the matchup like it sort of was in first edition. And even when you're playing against someone else, they probably have one summer plot or one winter plot in their deck that maybe they can just pick the turn where they really need that extra effect from the plot.
Yeah.
So I like it. People don't seem overly impressed with them. They'll compare Kings of Summer to Fealty because it gives extra gold some of the time and say they're not sure which is better for the resource boost. And I think that's how it should be. Yeah. You know, gold is better than reduction of loyal cards, but, you know, you have to kneel your faction card, but you have to dedicate your summer plot deck, but you can't include winter plot. I mean, it seems like those are, it's not obvious that you're going to replace one with the other.
Which is perfect. And winter seems to have this kind of like new mechanic that we haven't really seen before, which is kind of like a reserve choke, which is cool.
Especially since Wraiths in Their Midst is a reserve choke. So now opening with that would be a -3 reserve to anyone who's at 5 or above.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty interesting way to start off the game to say, look, make your choices early on. Because
Alanis, bam.
I think Alanis is overkill at that point, because if they do flip a 5 reserve plot, then you're still capping yourself at 2 with Wraiths.
I guess. Yeah. Still. 2's nice.
They also mentioned that there's going to be attachments to make people kings. I wonder if that's to make like Night's Watch and Martell be able to play with the king trait a little more, or whether that's just to make sure there aren't just 6 kings and there'll be, you know, more kings and it's more important than it was in first edition.
Yeah, because otherwise there'd be a really limited number of kings, and I think the whole idea of the next set is centered around these iconic king characters, or queens maybe.
Yeah, that is kind of tricky. I mean, we don't want them to leave Daenerys behind, but should she interact? I mean, we've already seen King's Hunting Party, which says if your opponent controls a king character. It doesn't say if your opponent controls a king or queen.
Yeah, but queen should be important. Cersei was queen for a little while, wasn't she? Like, kind of in lieu of one of her children?
She was queen regent, yes. Yeah. But I think the core card is a queen as well.
So, there you go.
That is a very stylized cue. My goodness. Okay, anyway. But maybe this shouldn't interact with queens. I don't know. Maybe the kings should be off fighting their own wars and queens should get their support later. I don't know whether queens should be treated exactly the same as kings.
I think for Dany, it's pretty important.
Yeah, that's the thing for Dany and for the Martells, who argue that queens should be in the line of succession in the same way. Yeah. They probably should treat them the same. But for all the other factions, they distinguish between kings and queens.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't know how you play that out.
It'd be funny if Dany just has the king trait.
It would. Is it a problem? Not.
Well.
Not really. Like, I'm okay with them using the traits just for flavor and occasionally just for mechanics. Like Stormborn, it's flavorful, but it's obviously just a mechanic tie-in. We probably won't see another Stormborn character ever. And so, you know, I think they can fudge things like that.
Yeah, I think so too.
That's that and spoilers, but speaking of Wolves, because I know that we're getting this box now. By the time you guys are listening, you probably know all the cards. Anything stand out at you as the ones to watch over the next couple of weeks of regionals as people sort of shake out this big glut of new cards?
I mean, there's definitely some kind of power rush deck for Stark in there when you start to look at the pieces. I think that's something to watch. But for individual cards, I think the Tower of the Hand is going to have a huge impact on the meta as a whole.
Yeah, I think it certainly makes me play Frozen Solid or Newly Made Lord. Yeah. I think that's the impact it has on my decks.
Right, but you know, maybe you're not Stark or Greyjoy.
Maybe then I have to banner to the Kraken or Lion. Neither of those cards are loyal.
Yeah, so there we are. That's the impact I'm talking about. I think it really will make people think about location control in a new way. Because it's one thing that when your opponent has some kind of draw, it's another thing where they can lock you down. And with Lannister's Gold, I think they really could get into a scenario where they're, you know, beating you down with popping your guys back to hand and discarding them.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot of people play Stark. And sure. I think that it will not necessarily be all of them that succeed. I'm certain that with this glut of cards, there is a Stark deck in there that is really going to be top notch. But I think that it may get lost in the noise of the annals of people trying some things that don't work. But speaking of things that may not work, the card I'm actually, like I was just building a deck for, is Winterfell. I'm really looking forward to playing with that because I spent so much time dismissing the wall as a four-cost location being unplayable.
Yep.
The Winterfell, for those of you who don't remember, it's a four-cost location that's a global strength boost for starts, which, you know, is not that big a deal. But it has the reaction after challenge is initiated that Neil Winterfell, any player with a non-winter plot, cannot trigger card abilities until the end of the challenge. And it feels to me like when Nate was talking about Stark being the police of the metagame, he's talking about cards like this that keep decks like the Lannister deck that we're looking at now honest. Suddenly, I'm not worried about tiers ever, as long as you don't flip a winter plot. I'm not worried about you jumping in a character into that particular challenge, or, you know, I've initiated my military. So that, in combination with Caitlin,
putting into me, you're not going to be triggering the Seastone chair.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that since Lannister's probably benefiting a lot more from these tricks, and they tend to be centered around specific challenges, like Tyrion's Gold, like the Tower of the Hand, for instance, is basically completely shut down by Winterfell, and that it's useful against other houses, I want to see if it's playable. Yep. Not sure it is, because again, it's four gold location, and I have a thing against those, but it's the deck that I'm trying to build right now. Is there something that you're trying to build, or are you actually waiting till you get the physical cards on Thursday, like the rest of the plebs?
I'm going to wait till I get the actual cards. And the other thing is, I'm really excited about a lot of the out-of-house cards in the box. I think they did a really good job of giving some interesting seeds for each of the house. Like, I really like Even-Handed Justice. I think that's going to be great in Baratheon.
Even-Handed Justice is phenomenal. That is just going to be a great card.
So excited about building with, you know, those ones and twosies that are coming in this box, too.
Ones and twosies.
Yeah, because they're
you should say that more often.
Two from each faction, basically, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's not Stark, and then a couple of onesies that are pretty cool in the neutral cards, I think. But we're going to review the box, so let's not go into too much detail
here. We will, yeah. All right, so we are in regional season now. There have been two regionals, and
the Banter Boys rocked it.
No.
Not the Banter Boys. I mean, the Brotherhood Without Manor Boys. The Brotherhood Without Manor Boys rocked it. Podcast, what do you want from me?
Well, if you were going to get it wrong, at least pretend that we did well, right? Be like, oh man, those Beyond the Wall guys just rocked.
I haven't gone to any regionals, but if they did, yeah.
First thing that I really want to mention about these regionals, so we've only had two so far, but one in Newington, Connecticut, and one in Indianapolis.
Big.
Yeah, big, 58 and 55 players. Either of those would have broken the record for the largest non-FFG-organized Thrones tournament in LCG history in North America.
Could you imagine what Gen Con's going to be? It's going to be nuts.
Gen Con's going to be capped at whatever, like 256 or something.
Or 300. If they're smart and they're really thinking for Joust, they're going to get a lot of space for their new Thrones, their first big new Thrones event.
I hope so. I hope they make a lot of space. Especially since I think Origins hasn't really gotten the publicity. So if they judge based on Origins on how much space, but they can't, right? They already have to have booked their space.
Yeah.
So hopefully they've gone big. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. Basically the largest regional last year was, I think, 38 players, the DC regional. Neither of these is a DC regional. You know, one had a bunch of people pulling from New York, which tends to be second highest and so on. But these are huge events, and yeah, that's incredibly encouraging to me.
Unlike store championships, you know, I was worried because some of them were small, 9, 13, 14. But this is what I was talking about when I say that the difference between a store championship and a regional. Regionals are way more competitive. More people show up. You have to go through a, you know, stronger group of people to take a win. So it really means, in my mind, more for the person that, you know, wins that. Takes a little luck. Takes a good deck. Takes a good pilot. So,
yeah.
Congrats to all the regional winners.
Yeah, and the regional winners, well, we only have two so far, but one was a Vera Fealty, and the other one was a Lannister Kraken. So it's worth noting the Newington Regional had a lot of Lannister and Banner of the Lion, a high proportion of it. And that's another thing that I wanted to mention, because one of the observations I want to make is that the field in regionals tends to look a little bit more like the cut in store championships.
Right.
People are playing the decks that they've seen do well in store championships. So just like we've seen for the King's Peace meta, there was, you know, Lannister was overrepresented in the cut, and it was a large portion of the cut. It was like 27% of the cut. Now we can expect that to work for the field in regionals right now. And I think, you know, it'll eventually get hurt by its own success, as we're seeing Greyjoy, which has some tech that works against Lannister, that is also on the rise. So I think the meta still has room to shake out, especially with this new box. But I would certainly use the cut of store championship season as a better way to inform what you can expect the field in a regional to look like.
Yeah.
I briefly mentioned Origins. Apparently they posted information for the U.S. National Championships. The Joust is 210 spots.
Oh, really? When is Origins?
Third week of June? Second week of June?
It is June 15th to 19th.
June 15th to 19th in Columbus.
I know the Montreal guys are driving down there.
Yeah, I know. There are certainly people making it. But, you know, it is the first year, and the community hasn't yet, like, been told how awesome it's going to be. Yeah. You know, it's not like Gen Con where we're all already planning hotels and the drinks that we're going to have and the songs that we'll sing in karaoke and all the other great things that are happening.
It could be a bomb. Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's a risk, and they'll get a few less people. And it's also, it was a little late. You know, people prep for Gen Con a year in advance and kind of get that date set in mind and get okay from loved ones and stuff. So,
yeah, you're already working on Terra for Gen Con next year, right?
Yeah, basically. Exactly. I mean, I'd love to get to Origins, but I think that's tough. It's a 10-hour drive for me.
Yeah. What else is there for news this week? There was a Melee-themed article written by Kenan from The White Book on the official FFG page, because Kenan doesn't write on his own page.
He doesn't, though. And, well, I mean, the best part of that article was that they admit him being a champion-level player.
I think he must have written that introduction. Has earned the moniker of championship-level player. That has got to come from him.
That was a pretty big introduction, so I could see that, yeah.
It was good. It was good, yeah. But I'm glad to see Melee get more attention on the front page. It's a comment that we had made last year as one of the things I hope to see more from FFG. So maybe we could get some tournament rules for it?
That would be great, eh?
I'm not bitter at all. The last thing that I have is that Nate French was on another cast this last week. And in fact, I was about 20 minutes into listening to his segment when you called me and told me that we could record now. So I don't know how it ends. Don't spoil it for me.
Okay, because I've listened to it. No, I haven't.
Do you have anything else for us for news?
I think those are all the most pertinent pieces of information.
Most pertinent pieces of information. You are unusually verbose.
It's for you, Alex.
Oh, which button? That button?
Alex just pressed the button. Did you feel that? Between your sultry voice and Alex's button pushing, I don't know. This could be a complicated cast.
People have praised your singing from last episode.
I heard, actually. People were talking about that to me.
Even worse, two people sent me emails telling me that they appreciated your mountain joke in the end credits.
Oh. That's
and I told myself I wouldn't tell you. But
and for those two listeners, those people that wrote in for the mountain joke, this one's for you. You know that you know, some people wear armor for protection. Armor actually wears the mountain for protection. Yeah. I know, crazy.
I think I just realized what you're doing. I didn't realize it at first. You're just pulling Chuck Norris jokes, aren't you?
What are you talking? Okay. I'd walk very carefully trying to accuse Chuck Norris of something, but we know that the mountain could take Chuck Norris, right?
I think there's no doubt in my mind.
All right. So they're obviously mountain jokes that Chuck Norris stole then. Yeah.
Isn't the mountain like the world's strongest man and Chuck Norris is like 70?
Yes, to both. Yeah.
And the mountain's never had a heart attack. You know why? Because even his heart's smart enough not to attack him.
Don't encourage him. Don't even know. All right, John, what do you have for us today?
Other than a really bad cold, we are going to be building a deck in the new meta today. We are joined by Sean Emberley. Some of you might know him because he's been on the cast before. Some might know him because he does these fantastic alternate art cards that are all over the place with his name on. And some of you might just know him because he's a cool guy. Hey, Sean.
Hey, thanks. I really love doing the art cards. I've done them for a couple of different communities now. I think it's a great way to incentivize coming out and building different metas. Everyone except Greg Atkinson seems to like them. So
I did see that post. I think you have the dubious distinction, or not distinction, of being our first repeat guest this season. You were on for a chapter pack review earlier in the season, and here you are again.
Awesome.
Nate was our first repeat guest, obviously. But, you're in good company.
Oh, I'm the Tyrion again.
Sorry, I mean, it is Nate. But you're going to build a deck with us, and we're going to build your favorite house, which is why you're here. So we're going to be building Greyjoy.
Perfect.
And the idea of this is that we want to try out a few new things. So, one, we want to build something for the first snow meta. Two, Greyjoy got a bunch of cool new toys in the last chapter pack. We want to play with some of those. So some of this Drown God synergy. So that's kind of the themes we're going for. Good versus first snow, something to do with Drown Gods. And the two aren't exactly in alignment since those new Drown God priests are cost 3. But, we have the right people to figure this out.
Absolutely.
I do want to say, so there's sort of two options when you're talking about building for a new meta like this one. I admit that I have yet to play with First Snow with or against in second edition. Since I got the chapter pack, I've been running demos for new players. It's great. It's fantastic. I haven't included First Snow in my new player decks, so I haven't really gotten a good feel for it. But really, when you know that a card is going to be this impactful, you're either building against it, what I sort of call winterproofing, or for it. And so your idea here is not to build a winterproof deck, but rather to build one that makes use of it, right?
I'm fine with building a winterproof deck as well. So we can do what our guest wants. What do you want to do, Sean?
In the immortal words of that little girl from the commercials about tacos, why not both? The great thing about Greyjoy is we have a lot of very strong 4+ strength characters, but it's a little bit weaker on the intrigue side. You drop a little bird on Asha, and all of a sudden, First Snow is your best friend when there's only, 2 or 3 opposing characters on the other side. She does all challenges herself, and then you have someone to defend with. If we were going to look at agendas, I don't know, you haven't mentioned agendas yet. Lord of the Crossing now becomes way more viable for Greyjoy out of the new intrigue characters that came out. Even though some of them won't make it past the first snow, as I said, Asha, little bird.
All right. I'm going to pop onto Thrones DB. I'm going to make a House Greyjoy Lord of the Crossing for Sean right now. It is happening.
Okay. I do want to press. I'm mostly going to be the skeptic here because I haven't had a chance to play with first snow yet. Lord of the Crossing, I can understand why you say we've gained the intrigue icons to potentially make that work out of Greyjoy. I've seen it do some things in the annals, but it really seems to me like at that point you are looking at anti-synergy with First Snow Winter. You're going to be cutting out your ability to do 3 challenges regularly on that turn.
If you were to run First Snow, but you'd still be immune because Greyjoy in and of itself, like Sean was saying, has a lot of these high-cost characters. So I think you actually have the ability to weather First Snow very well. You might not get your 3rd challenge off that turn, depending on if you have Little Bird and stuff like he was talking about. But you would definitely be able to get off that 3rd challenge most of the other times. Yeah. And Lord of the Crossing with Balon sounds sexy.
I think the thing that people miss out on Lord of the Crossing is that you're not always trying to get the 3 challenges off. Sometimes it is just kind of an, oh crap, I lose 1 strength in the first challenge, or I'm just defending this round. Like sometimes you're not getting the full benefit, but the turns you do are huge. When Balon is innately just 7 strength, like that's a beautiful turn.
Greyjoy Lord of the Crossing. Are we using cards from the new Wolves of the North? Because we've seen the Greyjoy cards spoiled, or are we just sticking with what's in the deck builder for now?
We're just going to stick with what's in the deck builder. The last chapter pack was the First Snow chapter pack, Mm-hmm. We're going to go a little bit crazy. And what chapter pad? What's the name of that chapter pad?
No Middle Ground. Although my name's not Alex.
That's okay. You got it. Alex is, he hasn't been on lately. When I've been asking rules question, he hasn't answered. I had to look them up twice now. I mean, he wasn't on his computer at the time, but that's no excuse, Alex. You should be answering rules from everywhere.
I'm training John. He has now looked up rules answers twice because
I was playing someone for the Octagon tournament. His name's Tyler. He was playing Greyjoy, so this is a, you know, a good segment. This one's for you, Tyler. And he had to look up a rule, Alex, because, you know,
Well, I feel bad for Tyler, but I don't feel bad for you.
I thought that was the whole idea behind Discord, is that you basically have a 24/7 hotline to Alex for rules questions.
That is the point behind Discord. And then when he doesn't answer, what's up with that?
Yeah. I do want to comment on the Wolves of the North question, though. Even though we're not building for it, I think when you start building with Wolves of the North, it's going to change the deck dramatically. I think you do, at that point, not just Winterproof, but incentivize using First Snow between Fish Whiskers and First Snow and Race in Their Mist. I have some pretty cool ideas.
I think I agree. I think that First Snow Winter and Fish Whiskers are very, very happy together.
Yeah, they're best of friends.
All right.
Let's start at the characters. We're going to go a little crazy here. What I'll do is I'll read the first one. I will say how many we should have of that character in the deck. Then Sean, you can have the next one, and Alex can take the third one, and we will just continue to rotate like that all the way through these characters. And that's how we're going to look at our first swipe at the characters that we'll cut as we need. So my first character is Aaron Dampier. We're going to have a lot of Ironborn. He's only got one icon, though, and he's 3 cost. Hurts in the first no meta. I'm going to put one of.
Yeah, I don't see more than one of with Aaron. I don't know if we're discussing the choices. Yeah. The problem with him is that he's kind of a trap. You have to build a deck around him. He's easy to remove and kill if you don't get a little bird to protect him, but then you also want to use those little birds for Asher or Balin for protecting them. So as great as his ability is, when it doesn't fire or when he gets killed, he's a real, he backfires pretty hard. So I agree with one.
Alex, do you have anything on that? Or are you happy with that too?
No, I think at this point there might be a case to be zero, but you seem to want to drive the intrigue from the Priest to the Drowned God, in which case I would definitely put him at one right now.
Lannis Greyjoy is the next one on the list. Currently, I'd say one. She's well-costed. I mean, if for First Snow, kind of bad. The intrigue icon is necessary. I don't know. It's kind of, you can go one or zero. I think if we were running Wolves of the North, I'd say one, possibly more, and go reserve choke first turn. But
Yeah, I like the reserve choke, obviously. And I think you're right. I think the intrigue icon makes her a one of to me. What about you, Alex? You okay with one?
If in Lords of the Crossing, we're going to need that intrigue icon, it's a one.
Yeah.
Asha is an interesting call. I know you guys are probably thinking three. I would normally not be running her at three, but if we are running for Snow of Winter, I would run her at three. So if we are going to be running it on our side, I'll keep her at three because her stealth gets and her ability get disproportionately better when there are a few characters on the board, when we can cut that character count down. And she does help enormously for the Lord of the Crossing aspect of this.
100%.
I would say she's probably more important than Balon to the deck right now.
I agree too.
Yep, so she could do all challenges herself.
Yep. I got Balon, Lord of the Crossing. We already talked about a 7-strength Balon and how good that is. I'm going to put him in at 3 of.
He's an amazing character, but I think we're going to wind up pretty cost heavy, and we're probably going to include a Euron again because we need some more icon spread and because of things like Arbor are around. So I could actually see a justification for pulling him down to 2 of if we need to free up that top end a little bit more. But I'm okay with starting with 3 right now.
Sean, you got the Black Winds Crew.
Yeah, Black Winds Crew it's always been kind of an ugly card to me. I don't think it's that great, but it was kind of like a necessary evil. Have we reached the point where we don't need it anymore? Like, I get 3 cost, 3 strength, 2 icon is like, well, efficient. But he doesn't really offer much in the sense of utility or abilities. The Ironborn trait, obviously, can bring him back. But we're running one of Aaron. We're not doing an Aaron tower. And 3 is kind of bad for First Snow. What do you think? 0?
0.
0.
Yeah.
For all those reasons, I think we've probably passed the need for him.
Drownman is again, a somewhat tricky call. He's at that perfect first snow winner slot. He, however, is dependent on whether we're going to be pushing a fair few warships or not.
He does have the Drown God trait, so he would gain from those little...
He would. So priests. If the plan is to run three of the priests, then I'm probably running three of the Drown Men as well.
Yeah, I played a melee deck, three Drown Men, three Drown God priests, and all boats recently, and they get ridiculous. Like, I had melee opponents asking me, like, oh, what strength are they now? Oh, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, he's just 8 naturally. Yeah, he just is amazingly strong now because of all of these buffs. I think there are 3 of.
So, yeah. Okay. I'll agree. If we're going to be putting the Priest of the Drowned God to milk that, then I will put the Drowned Men at 3.
All right. Well, we talked about Euron. 7 coster. It's a high cost ratio. He does have all 3 icons. He's got that Pillage of the Renown. I like him at a 1 or 2 of. If we put him at 2 of, we may have to go back and cut a Balin down to a 2 of 2. What do you guys think?
I would favor 2 of and 2 Balin because right now a chance to pull an Arbor is game winning. And I'm seeing a lot of that. So I may not have played a lot with First Snow, but I have played against a couple of decks that have been using the Arbor. And just even the possibility of being able to do that is huge.
I think considering the meta, he's a more valuable card. We always knew Euron would get stronger with stronger location base. It helps not just against the Arbor, but any wall decks. There's a lot of potential now for cheesy sit and wait wall decks more than we've seen before because of Gendry and the Blacksmith that just came out. So yep. 2 is a good idea.
All right, so I'm putting him at 2, and I'm going back and putting Balon down to 2.
The Hedge Knight, I think, is actually it. Are we doing neutrals as well?
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Hedge Knight, as much as I love him, I'd say 0.
Agreed.
He doesn't fit in the deck, right?
Iron Allen's Fishmonger is a 3 of. I don't think there's any debate needed.
Littlefinger. So this is an interesting quandary for me. Greyjoy likes draw. It doesn't really. It has lots of draw with its unopposed. But we do need the intrigue icon. Income's all right. It's neutral. It's 5 cost. This is a tough call. It works with First Snow and it stays on the board. I'm going to say 1 of for now, and you guys could actually argue me down to 0. So let's hear what you think.
I would push you down to 0. I think it's neutral. I think we'll have in-house reducers, and I think we'll almost always want to play something better than Littlefinger. I also don't think the card draw is quite as good in a First Snow of Winter meta where we're more likely to be hitting reserve on certain turns if we're playing that as our... I mean, the gold can help as well, but no, I would say 0. I just don't think this character is impactful enough for this deck.
He's tempting, but your opponent can capitalize on when you play him because it will slow you down. It's too much of a tempo cost.
All right. You've convinced me to go 0 like I thought you would.
All right, Sean?
Yeah, the Lord's Port Shipwright. I love this guy. He is cheap. He's the right side of cheap for a First Snow being 2 cost. And he has an amazing ability to control locations. And he controls locations before First Snow triggers. So if you have him on the board or you have him in hand, he's still worth using. So I would argue between 2 and 3, but I usually go 2.
Yeah, I'm for 2 or 3 as well, for all those reasons. And, you know, he's got the Ironborn trait, which isn't that important. We do have Aaron Dampair, 1 of, mm-hmm. but it's there. What do you think, Alex?
2 or 3, I agree, which means that for now I'd be tempted to put him at 2 and just see how many characters we wind up with, but he's definitely one of the places I would look to bring myself up to 3 if necessary.
Master Windermere, that's yours, Alex?
It is, it's mine. He's a unique, he has got stealth, he's amazing, but he's also a character that we have to be willing to kill, and he's not really a character that we want to be duping Survivor Snow. He's the least important challenge on that turn, so for me, he's a 1 of.
Yep.
Alright, I got newly made Lord, and you guys are probably not going to like what I'm going to say about him. 4 cost is great for First Snow, sure. He's got the Lord, so he can be reduced by some of those plots and stuff. Marshalling's great, you know, you marshal him, you can blow up a pretty cost 3 location, but it's not limited, and it's got to be 3 cost or lower, so that's some good locations. I just think there's better 4 costers in the deck. I don't think we're going to have room for this guy, and we're probably going to run events to blow up locations. What do you guys think?
I feel really, really bad if we don't include him as a 1 of, at least. If we're going to include summons and so on, it may change my evaluation of him, but... It's the point and click. It's the we're perfectly happy with him dying on a First Snow turn, more so than other characters because he's already done most of his job when he comes into play. He's still got that Lord trait, and there are an increasing number of Bera decks that are trying to push Gendry and so on to dominance.
Yep.
That having that point and click for location red removal. Keep or whatever it is big. I would put him in it at one right now as a placeholder, and if we don't run summons at all, maybe you can convince me down to zero. I could, for me, he's one or two in this deck, and you know, if you're saying zero, I'm willing to go down to one.
Actually, I haven't given a number. My number was one, so I actually just wanted to throw bad things at you to push you guys down to one, which is what I wanted.
You can't say that after the fact. That's like my friend who would send me music so I would listen to it and tell him if it was good or not without giving me his opinion.
You see, if I had done it and said, well, I'm going to trick you into coming down to one to join me, it really wouldn't have worked out.
I would argue this is a card that is also affected by, we're talking about no middle ground and not Wolves of the North. I think it'll be a two of in Wolves of the North. I think it's a one of in the current meta.
What do you think brings it as a two of in Wolves of the North?
The landing location.
Yeah, Tower of the Hand.
Tower of the Hand.
Yeah. Tower of the Hand is so ridiculous in my
opinion. I don't think it'll be as NPE as, say, Gaston Grey in first edition, but it definitely has more checks and balances, but it will create the same sort of control effects on at least one turn. Once per turn. And as far as Newly Made Lord goes, going back to the topic, he's not a great setup card either, but he does have the bonus of being the perfect chud for a first snow. If you're going to eat a military, might as well be a Newly Made Lord.
All right. You have Priest of the Drowned God there, Sean.
Oh, I do. Three of. Real easy. Each one makes each one stronger, sort of like a Hedge Knight effect, where the more you have in the deck, the more efficient they are. They also help our Drowned Men, and they have the intrigue icons that we need at a decent cost. Not the best cost for first snow, but a decent cost.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Next up, Rattleshirts Raiders. This is going to be a zero of. We have the four costers we need from other sources, including the Newly Made Lord and the Drowned Men. And we're going to have Theon, and we are going to have the attachment control in the form, but we do not. So this is not a card we need in here.
I'm complete agreement of that. Salty Navigators. Now, I like these guys normally. I like the initiative boost. It's kind of important to go first. I do plan on trying to cram some boats in here to let us push on opposed challenges through, which are just so much more effective on first snow turns, which you can tend to sometimes get the initiative. However, there are this two cost slot. We do have a bunch of lower cost guys now. You know, we got a bunch of three costers, got a few two costers, some one costers. So I'm feeling like this is a two of because of that. What do you guys think?
Two.
Yeah, I think two of. It depends on what we do with the Wildling Scout, which I would argue for. So yeah. I'd say two.
Excellent.
Yeah, I agree. The Wildling Scout is actually what I was going to say. So, excellent point.
Greyjoy Binds think alike.
Serio, sir.
That is you, Sean.
I'm completely falling out of order. Sorry. Serio, I love Serio, but it's a bit more controversial for Greyjoy because our economy's not that great. I would still say one, though. The difference is when you face an opponent who has Serio and you don't, you'll understand my apprehension on ever going zero Serios right now.
I think also the characters that have intrigue icons tend not to have stealth, unlike the other base characters. So I think it would be good to have Serio to be able to maybe push through some of those intrigue challenges if we wanted to actually win them. So I can agree with the one of. I think that's probably the right number. I wouldn't go higher than that.
Serio is absolutely one of my favorite characters right now in the game. I love what he does. I find room for him in so many decks. This is not a deck in which I would have put him. We have the existing tools there. I have a feeling we may also have some tools to deal with Nymeria built into either the plot deck or some other aspects shortly. However, it being one of my favorite cards, it doesn't take much convincing for you guys to up me up to one. So let's put it at one and leave it there.
Yeah, all right. My instinct would roll to zero, but having played against him and not having him, or being in a situation where you can't get that third challenge off and he can produce a third challenge, he's great for crossing too.
I have the Reader. Excellent card. Card draw is great. If you're looking to mill or pillage an arbor right now, you might even trigger the other thing, although you probably won't and probably shouldn't unless you have a Euron in play. But at this point, I still think he's a one of. I think that we do we have other characters we want to protect more than him. We may occasionally be losing him to claim and other aspects, and our high end is pushed pretty steep. I don't think we can afford to have two of them.
I think, yeah, based on the Sirio decision, he's a one of. If we didn't have Sirio, we had less expensive characters, we could go two of. But the problem with him is also...
Yeah, he's got that intrigue icon that we're still... I know that we're probably going to put some Wildling Scouts in here to fill that hole. I think he is a one-up for sure, and we might want to come back and bring him up to two. But I agree right now, we're at 26 characters. Let's see how we pan out in characters and then decide if we want to go back and add a reader. It also means that if we probably do add a reader, we're most likely going to have to go back and affect our the plots we decide to pick for economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got Theon. I think, stealth, a little bit of acceleration through power. That 3 strength is a little bit annoying, but that 4 cost is perfect for the first no meta. He's a solid 2 of for me. I don't think we go to 3 of for him. I don't think he does enough.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I think he'll only drop down to a 1 of when we get more ally hate in the meta. I think he'll stick around as 2 of for a while.
I think we can skip the Varus and Wildling Horde. They're both cards that are interesting, but they're neutral, and we're going to want some neutral cards in the deck, and they're expensive. So, Sean, why don't you give us the Wildling Scout?
Right. Okay, cool. I want to talk about this card. I'm happy. I was about to say, and now I get to talk about Varus for 2 seconds, which is no. It does not work for what we're doing right here. But Wildling Scout, on the other hand, is pretty amazing. When I saw this card, it basically screamed to me, you know, Greyjoy. This is a Greyjoy benefit here. And then when Mance comes out, obviously it'll scream Mance. But right now, it covers an intrigue gap that Greyjoy's had for a while. And it comes in at a good cost. It won't survive first snow. But the sacrifice stealth effect, you can weasel in a power challenge to win the game that you might not otherwise be able to get. I love it. And I'd say between 2 and 3, probably 2. Unless we need to pump more characters in.
I think we both need to pump more characters, and I love what this character can do. And I think a character that has a sacrifice effect or that kind of thing is not as much of a concern for first snow. You're not necessarily expecting it to stick around for as long anyway, and you're not as upset to see it leave just for that bonus stealth because you know your opponent might first snow or your first snow might be coming. I'm definitely happy with this as a 3 of.
All right, so we make him 3 of. That gives us 31 characters. I feel like I still want more characters. I like to run at, 33 is my minimum for character count. What about you guys?
I mean, I said that on the cast, basically, yeah. That 33 was my minimum. I think it's slightly less true now, especially if you're replaying some of those characters on first no winter turns and so on, and board states are a little bit smaller. But I do think we do want to up that still. And yeah, I think there are a couple places we can do that.
I think the first snow meta makes it lower than 33, or at least being lower than 33. But the crossing aspect of this deck makes it higher. You want to be able to have more characters out to do all of your challenges if you can.
And for me, that's going back first to the Lord's Boardship, right, and upping that to 3 of.
Yeah.
That's the first place I'm looking for another character. And then if I would not be upset with going up to a third Salty Navigator at the moment.
See, I would move Baelon up to a 3 of.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That higher cost.
All right, we'll see what it looks like in setups. But Baelon is good. Baelon is really good. So we can go with that. And
That leaves us at 33 characters, which I think is our minimum. So how about we stick with that and we look at some of these great Greyjoy locations.
All right.
So before we get into the locations, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add the normal reducers. So 3 Rose Roads, 3 King's Roads, and 3 of the Greyjoy Sea Towers. So that we basically have the full set of 9 reducers, which I think is something we're going to need. But let's talk about the other locations. So Sean, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. Great Kraken. Now, Great Kraken is a card that I think changes based on support of the people. Are we running support of the people? How many support of the people?
I feel like we're probably going to end up running 2 support of the people. What do you think, Alex?
This is the point where I start whiffling because it very much depends on things like plot choice, on whether we're going to be trying to run a Shadow Black Lane to dig for events as part of our draw engine, things like that. Because we're trying to push intrigue and we don't currently have a faction Neil. And if we have other sources of draw, then I don't feel we need to push the support of the people angle all that hard. So yeah, now's the point where I go, this deck can really branch out even with this character base in many directions. And I feel like we need to constrain that and decide which direction.
All right, let's do that. So, you know, if we take a look at the Greyjoy events, because that'll inform us a little bit for the Shadow Black lane, ones that I think are really important in a first snow meta is actually the save. I think we're probably going to want to run 3 Risen from the Sea to really be able to save those Greyjoy key characters on a first snow turn if someone gets a jump on us. Also, you know, save against Tears. It's a great card. I think we're going to probably run 3. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Queen's Assassin seeing a big return now with first snow.
Agreed, yeah.
I had cut Risen out of most of my decks prior to the first snow because of the danger of Hand's Judgment. You know, free exchange where I lose a character or a card and all they do is lose a card. But
well, not really. They still had to kill the character from some other source.
True. That's okay, so I shouldn't say free exchange, but it's still, there's nothing more disheartening than I'm going to save Balin to make him stronger. Oh, I just lost Balin. So, yeah, well. I mean, and then, with the prevalence of Hand's Judgment, I wouldn't be saving Balin first as first choice these days. But still, I think before it was questionable whether you're including Risen, and now it's kind of not mandatory, but a good idea.
Yeah.
A very good idea.
And Alex, you talked about We Don't Not So earlier. I think we're going to run We Don't Not So. It's our attachment rule.
So to me, if I wanted to run Shadow Black Lane, I would have to run 7, ideally 8 Greyjoy events, which means we'd be looking at loot, which I think we're going to agree is probably not what we want to do, or Kraken's Grasp, which I actually like more now that I was surprised by it a couple of times that it's been played against me. But I think if you're talking first snow, its primary use is to prevent some Chud blocking. We're probably going to have some locations to do that. We're probably not. I mean, are we including first snow in this deck?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I want to go back and discuss something there. You mentioned loot, and while my inkling normally is to say no, we're going for an intrigue heavy. If we're going to go Shadow Black instead of Sea Stone or Shadow Black over Sea Stone, loot seems more viable in first snow, taking away their ambush effects. Although with Shadow Black, we're showing we have loot, and then they can ambush. So it sort of negates the benefits of getting it with Shadow Black.
Although we can use it on the Shadow Black challenge.
Players are just going to ambush in their characters before you get the end of post.
Yeah, absolutely. Its mere existence encourages them to do effects before an oppose happens.
Sure, but if they're doing that, then we can stealth those targets.
Yeah. It's true.
So there is that might be an angle. I mean,
but we get that bonus without running loot. The mere existence of loot in the meta will force them to do the ambush thing.
I think it does if you have Shadow Black. I don't think it does otherwise.
It also depends on your individual meta or where you're playing, because people tend to know, like, oh, no one's playing meta or loot, or they haven't faced it yet. They won't have the fear as much as if you were actually playing one or two copies.
In all honesty, I'm not a huge fan of loot yet. Maybe I need to see it and play a little bit more. I'm more of the opinion to go with, you know, 2 put to the sword, 2 support of the people, and call it a 10 event day.
Okay, and if we're doing that, then we're not running Shadow Black.
Yeah, that's when we go to Sea Stone, and we just start killing people indiscriminately.
Which is fine. It works fairly well on the first snow turn, allowing us to pick. So 2 support of the people and 2 put to the sword was what you were saying?
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
8 locations to bounce around.
So one thing that does raise, though, is the lack of Hand's Judgment. Is that something we're not liking in the current meta or just in this deck?
I'm loving Hand's Judgment in the current meta a lot. I'm finding it really important to stop those kill effects. Now, we have the Risen that kind of fills a similar hole for the kill effects. And because of that, we might be able to shy away from going with the Hand's Judgment.
I also think we're going to have some strength pumps and some relatively high threat, low impact characters like Priest the Drowned God and Drowned Men that can either survive Dracarys or draw out the Dracarys.
Yeah.
So I actually think that we can get away without Hand's Judgment. And honestly, the economy in this deck won't leave us with a ton of golds to be sitting on to cancel a put to the sword. So the Risen is a safer bet there anyway.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
All right, so let's go back to locations. We got 8 spots left. You know, I think we're going to want at least 2 rating long ships. Anyone disagree with that?
I think it's a question of whether you prefer fishing nets or rating long ships, but I think in First No Meta, you actually prefer rating long ships.
Yep.
By far. So.
All right, I'm putting in 2 Sea Stone Chair, 2 rating long ships, and 2 Great Kraken. How does that sound, folks?
2, 2, and 2.
Mm-hmm. We're leaving scouts out, which I really like for setup, but it's very hard to find a space for them now.
Well, we're at 58 cards, so with 2, 2, and 2, we have 2 left. We can either do, you know, 2 scouts or 2 fishing nets.
I thought we needed little birds.
We do, and we need the scouts for the drowned men boost. We don't need, but it's very helpful. So it's,
yeah, I think we could cut a sea tower. Or a sea stone chair. Yeah. I don't ever want to draw a second copy, and we do have a tool to go get it. And it's not phenomenal on setup. It's better when played when your opponent doesn't know you have it already.
All right. I'm Iron Fleeting Scout to 2. I'm dropping Sea Stone to 1. And I'm going to Great Kraken into 1, leaving us 2 spots for our little birds. How does that sound?
Sounds like your math is the same as mine.
Because Great Kraken's expensive. It's a 3 coster. It's a little bit of a tempo hit in a First No Meta. And again, we would be relying more on the support of the people to bring the Great Kraken home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All this makes me consider that second reader a little bit more, though. I don't know if either of you agree with me.
But. I do, but I think if we put that second reader, we probably have to drop Sirio and count on the Wildling Scouts to be the additional support there.
Yeah,
and I'm actually okay with that. I think the draw is probably more important for us. And with the Wildling Scouts, I think we have enough intrigue and stealth.
Okay.
You guys okay with that change as well?
We've dropped a Sirio for a second reader.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we have 2 little birds. That's right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at exactly
60 cards.
We're at exactly 60 cards.
Now we just need to talk about one very important thing, some plots.
We do. Building decks backwards and all that. Well, we don't need to talk about First No Winner because we decided that this was going to be a First No Winner deck.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done a number of things like the emphasis rating longships being very good on that turn.
Yep.
Since we're likely to control initiative, we can put the pressure. Asha with the smaller board acts is much, much more pressure as well. In general, we're likely to get some unopposed if we can go first, even if the turn is not going to go well for us. We can at least get some draw out of either the Great Kraken or Theon. So I think the deck is well suited to First No Winter. It's an obvious plot choice, and since it's a limit 1 per plot deck, we can't run 2. I don't think we would run 2. It's not the kind of plot you run 2 of.
No. Let's talk economy before we look at the other plots. Let's talk about our economy plots. How are we getting all these big cost characters out? Because we got a bunch. I'm thinking at least a Noble Cause, maybe a Trading with the Pentos?
Pentoshi. I'd like to echo some support there for Pentoshi. I've been playing with it recently, and as much as I'm loath to give my opponent anything, there's something to be said for coming out of the gates with 10 gold plus whatever you might have set up as reducers. You get a really strong setup. You get all of your big beefy characters on the board, and they can survive the first snow that's coming.
Yeah.
I'm willing to do it that way.
So you're willing for both those 2. Now, the one question that happens here to me is calling the banners. I actually like to run about 3 gold producers plots in my Greyjoy decks because I find that they don't have a way of like producing that solid gold so I can use my events and play out my big characters. Mm-hmm. And calling, even if they only have like 3 characters on their side of the board, you know, generates me about 6 gold. And it's got a nice initiative which allows me to go first so that my ready long ships can kick in. What do you guys think of that?
I think if we're doing Noble Cause and Pentoshi, it's kind of tough because I think we do need some initiative and we're lacking it right now. But well, there is a point to be made. Yeah, calling has good initiative, which is why there's a case to be made for that. There's also a case to be made for Calm Over Westeros as an anti-first snow plot in the meta. If we think we're going to be suffering, it's a good way to survive that turn, to have more gold around and not to be suffering as greatly from whatever claim is thrown at us. Yeah. So the question is whether we want that insurance either on the turn after the first snow, where we think they might march and follow up with something strong, or whether the initiative that we're getting out of calling is more important. And I would lean to say that the initiative is more important right now, but I wanted to make sure that we mentioned calm in the context of First Note Winter.
Yeah, my gut says that the calling initiative is more important.
Yeah, I would actually argue that you could pull out a noble cause and put in 1 to 2 calling the banners because of the initiative. As a Greyjoy deck running the Go First tech, we can't really afford to give the game to our opponent, right? To dictate who's going first in the order. We have to punch them.
I do like that a lot. I like the fact that, you know, we could just drop a noble cause, we could run 2 calling and trading, and that would be our high gold plots, and we'd have
those
high gold plots as initiative.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's do it. I agree.
All right.
I like to have a plot in there to handle something big, either a fortified position to filthy accusations, some sort of control plot. Game of Thrones is a possibility, although I think it's gambling a little bit in this Lannister heavy meta. And of those, I don't know if we can run fortified. It's one of my favorite plots again, especially with all the Nymeria around. But and Great Kraken still works through it. But I think we might be losing too much if we do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, being a stealth-based faction, I would argue against that.
So then my inclination would be for that to be filthy accusations.
Yeah, I like the filthy, but let's come back to it. I think we need to make a decision on our closer. Are we going to try to be closing with a Rise of the Kraken?
I think a Clash of Kings is actually a better closer right now. When Ahead of the Tide comes out, I'd be more inclined to argue for Rise of the Kraken. And I know that sounds crazy, but I can explain. With King's Roads giving initiative and Rise of the Kraken being lower initiative than some very common plots, including Sneak and Clash of Kings, I feel like you're taking a big risk with the low gold and the chance you're not going to get first. And a Clash does almost the same thing for the power challenge, at least. I know it doesn't have the same punch and pull and close as Rise, but I'm always concerned about swinging, whiffing with it. I don't know what you guys think.
So your big thing is that Clash has that extra 2 gold that if you're forced to play it, you're in a position where you're not really closing, but you've gone too far, that if you stumble on this lost plot, it's going to affect you less in the bad games. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Exactly. Yeah.
I can see that argument, and I'm willing to try it. I am certainly hesitant to run a 2 gold plot right now, given the way our curve is looking. And given the fact that an opponent can play, you know, First Snow Winter or something, and we could be left with a 2 gold plot, even though we have initiative control and claim 2, I don't also think we need that much acceleration. We already have some acceleration from Lord of the Crossing, and we already have some of, you know, Great Kraken and tools like that. So I think Clash of Kings is perfectly suitable, and I would be happy to play that instead of Rise of the Kraken.
All right, so we got 2 flex plots now, either search or control. You mentioned that you really want that control plot, Alex. Let's talk about that. You said Filthy Accusations was kind of the one you were leaning towards because it has an initiative of 4.
And it has the ability to get you an unopposed challenge you weren't going to get. And, you know, lots of people are playing Gregor and so on, and he's attempting target to just kneel out of the way and make a lot of room on the board. Other possibilities there, like I mentioned, there are some control plots that we haven't really touched on, like Game of Thrones, which I still think is risky. There's the question of whether we run March to the Wall, which is a very nice follow-up to a successful First Snow of Winter, but can also just be overkill in that case. If we pulled off a really nice First Snow of Winter, we don't really need the March to finish off.
March does have great initiative. Let's just keep control of that as well. And it does give us the oomph if someone sets up that just single big character.
Yeah, I like it to keep the meta honest. I certainly do like March as well. But I feel like we've got...
You know what I like?
We've got to have a search plot.
I like naval superiority.
I disagree. I think I like naval superiority less and less the more that new plots come out that aren't affected by it. And calling the banner has always been a way to weasel around it a little bit. I mean, you might lose your 3 gold printed, but you're still going to get like the 4 or 5 or at least minimum.
Well, 3. I think he's looking at naval superiority as a follow-up to First Snow Winter, where calling the banners is not going to generate a ton of gold, because there aren't that many characters on the board. And if they really want to reflood, they need to play probably a Kingdom or Edict.
And if they don't, I'm in a good position if they play a low gold plot anyways. So really, as a follow-up, it's a pretty nice follow-up. Gives you initiative, lets you kind of push in their face a little bit. I really like it. And in fact, I'd be willing to say, because I agree with Alex that we don't need a closer as much, that maybe we should think about putting it there instead of a Clash for Kings and still have that summons.
The catch for me right now with Naval Superiority is that, to me, it is really only a plot that we're going to be using after First Snow Winter. And there are some situations there are other situations in which you want to use it, but the primary role here is an after First Snow Winter plot, and we won't be lining up a perfect First Snow Winter every game.
No. I think it's good opener sometimes, especially after the cut in tournaments, when you have a perception that someone's always opening with trading or always opening with Noble because they're expecting First Snow Winter from you. And it gives you this great mind game where you've played all through the Swiss, opening First Snow most rounds, and then all of a sudden you Naval Superiority their face into one of their big gold plots because they thought the First Snow was coming. They're trying to prepare for it. And man, they're down. And it makes them honest. They can't always open with that big gold plot against you and assume that you're going to be First Snowing because they might run into your Naval.
Yeah, those are all excellent points. I mean, my other point against it would be the gold. Gold 2 and Greyjoy is a lot more harmful than in other factions.
It's up to you, Alex. You're against it. We won't put it in.
I think I'm against it in a situation where most of our early game is desperately trying to get some 4 gold plus characters on the board so we can line up a First Snow Winter with some location support. And I don't think we can do that if we play. I think that essentially if we try and do it so that we can play the 2-7-1 before we play First Snow, then we don't need First Snow. And if we try and do it afterwards, I think in many cases it's overkill.
You figure you just feel like you've already won anyways, and you didn't need to choke them out.
Yeah, that's my feeling. I mean, I think there's definitely an argument to be made for playing around with that kind of plot combination, and I wouldn't be upset with leaving the seventh slot as a flex plot, playing the deck a few times and seeing what we want there. But my guess is what I'm going to want there is a summons.
No, I actually want a summons. So the plot that I think is the most flexible is a Clash for Kings. We currently have a Clash of Kings, and that's actually where I would slot my Naval or my March or my Clash. And that's the plot to me. That's the flex plot. Do you guys agree with that, at least, that would be the plot that you would change the most likely, the most?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, with the amount of renown on characters, Theon, pseudo renown, and crossing, unopposed power, usually pretty good too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we like it for the initiative. The initiative is great, but that it could become a marched. It could become the 2-7-1, and it could stay as Clash of Kings. You're right. It's probably the flex plot in this case.
Oh, I think we just built the deck, guys.
I think we did. So the plot deck is currently Clash of Kings, 2 calling, filthy summons, First Snow Winter, and trading with the Pentoshi.
Yep. And that Clash of Kings is the plot that we think people could fool with the most. And then they heard my excellent reasons for doing that already now.
Yeah. So there's a very, very important next step here. Do you know what the next step is?
Is it naming the deck? Yeah.
Oh, I was going to go for a far more important step than that.
Okay, let's hear it.
Got to plug this into the setup calculator, guys. Not stellar. Right now, if we mulligan the 3 card, we still have an over 80% chance of a 4, 5, or 6.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But yeah, your mulligan strategy has to be to mulligan 3. Mulligan 2 leaves you with 3 cards far too often.
Yeah.
So you are risking some rather lousy with mulligan 2 card setups here. But you have to mulligan 3 in this deck.
I almost always mulligan 3 in every deck.
Well, you have to build the deck and know that it's going to improve with a 3 mulligan.
It's almost always.
And we're not great at using 8 gold on setup. We're only 72, 73% chance of using it. But that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We can do better, but I don't think it's something to be concerned about. Yeah. Being a gold behind is not that big a deal. Being a card behind can be early on. All right. So this looks like it could work. Looks like it can play out. Yeah. Are there any big questions you have about this deck? Like, what would you be looking for in your first couple of testing matches besides that flex plot we're talking about?
For me, I think I would be really watching how often I open with, like, trading or first snow to really see if the sense is that the first snow, is it something that's happening a mid-game pulse, which is what my gut's telling me, is that I'm going to be more likely to use first snow mid-game instead of opening with it. But I'd like to see what the percentage of time I feel comfortable opening with first snow is, because I think that form possible changes to the character base.
And possibly the plot deck as well. And if you're reliably opening with that, it frees up where you can use the 271, for instance. So, yeah, I can definitely see that. I'm curious as to support of the people. I have not had a chance to play it in Greyjoy Lord of the Crossing yet. It seems like it would be amazing. But I want to see how often that's causing me to sacrifice other tempo plays, other challenges I could have made in the early game because of the desperate need to pull off the locations.
Yeah.
So,
because one of the things I am a little concerned about is the fact that we are only running the one Seastone Chair and the one Great Kraken. I think the chair I normally run two of. So this is something that's, you know, I feel a little bit. And, if, you know, if Aaron was here, he'd just be saying that you're supposed to add that as your 61st card.
Yeah, but Aaron is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't in that case, to, he's wrong. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go to 61. That's a very rare situation where you get any sort of good feeling from 61 cards. I agree, though, that one Great Kraken and one Seastone, and knowing my luck, that'll be the one card they pull on some sort of, like, heads on spikes or, like, some sort of pillage or discard effect, and then it's gone forever, right? There's no way to get it back.
So with the three high gold plots, what I would actually do is I would play a bunch of games and I would see that how often I'm needing my reducers. And it might be possible to remove a Rose Road from this and run, you know, 8 instead of 9 economy locations and have a second chair.
There are some other things that we can do potentially to improve setups. It's possible that we can drop down to 2 We Do Not Sows, although right now I wouldn't. Again, there's just that much Arbor. And you know, We Do Not Sow on an Arbor is just a phenomenal for you, you know, game changingly.
And if they get the Arbor duped on turn one, you know, on setup, you're just one thing we'd be looking for in this deck, I think, is how often two times calling the banners is actually useful. I think it will be, but you know, it's hard to say if we wouldn't want a seventh utility plot like the March or it calls it Naval instead.
So, John, for our tip of the week, we just got all the spoilers from Wolves of the North, and I really want us to have a tip of the week where we sort of, like, mention how to approach having all these new cards, this glut of options, and how to break it down into manageable chunks. But I don't know how to do that.
Well, I think there's two ways you attack these cards, right? The first way is you take all your existing decks, and you look at the cards, and you say, what are these new cards would slot into my existing decks and make them better? And then you try that out. And then the other way to look at it is from a pure new build perspective. And I found personally, as a new player, and it's been a while now, but when I was a new player, it was easier for me to slot in the cards into existing decks than to build right from scratch. And then I would play with these cards in existing decks a little bit, get a feel for them before I would, like, take the, you know, the bigger dive into the deep end and build with a ton of these new cards all at once. It would let me get some play, you know, some experience with them. And I found that an easier approach.
It's important to recognize what kind of cards can slot in and what kind of cards can't. Like, you know, things like Rickon and Osha and Shaggy Dog and Sansa, those are low cost curves. They're replacing something else in that similar range. And they don't require a massive rebuild to look at. But when you're starting to talk about things like Jon Snow, who's a sacrifice engine, or certainly the bigger characters, or even ones that are a little more niche like Arya, I think it takes a lot more work to build around them, and there may be ones that you want to see a little bit later on. Yeah, I have too many de novo ideas, too many things I want to try and see if they work from scratch to maybe be the right person to talk about going easy and approaching this one card at a time. I just have these visions of grandness. I will uncover something no one has seen before.
Yes, you will be the unique and special butterfly that everyone is surprised with.
Except that I don't get to use any deck in a regional until possibly July 30th. So I don't think it'll be that unique and special by then.
Exactly.
That'll be my Gen Con deck.
It's basically going to be the same thing for me. With the low number of cards we have, everything is going to be close to being solved.
Except my unique and special deck.
Right. Yes, you are unique and special.
Mine will be different. All right. Well, enjoy Wills of the North. This week, let us know what kind of crazy concoctions you've cooked up so I can claim it's my unique and special deck and that you stole it from me.
Email all your unique and special decks to Alex. That'd be great.
Closing comments, John. We actually have things. We totally do.
There's some tournaments coming up on April 9th. We got two of them. One is in Bel Air, which is in Maryland, and it's at Bel Air Games. And then we have another one at Holt AFK Games. And
Holt, Michigan.
Yeah, Holt, Michigan.
So two more regionals. These will be the regionals just after the release of the box. So I'm really interested to see whether people are willing to take that, you know, we've only had the cards spoiled since like Monday, and we've only had a week to work on the cards and the decks. Will it make the splash this week, or will it take another week before we see the Star Fox really make a splash?
People will splash with it for now, for sure.
I think they will, and I hope they do. I really look forward to this phase of experimentation. It's exciting, and people can really surprise a meta, especially when the meta is a little bit figured out because it's similar to the King's Peace meta in that the Lannister presence and that Greyjoy is countering it. You have some predictable anchors that you can expect to face and build around. So as I mentioned, it will be the first set of regionals with Wolves of the North. We will be reviewing Wolves of the North next week. We have some very special guests lined up for this one. It's the first deluxe box. We got to give it a little extra attention.
Yes.
And then the other thing is that there are two more enormous tournaments the week after that I, again, want to mention, which is the one in Saragossa and the Tournoi de la Mer in France. So if you're in Spain or France on the weekend of the 16th and 17th, those will just blow any of these regionals out of the water for attendance. They're both going to be in the 120 to 180 person range. So
thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
But Alex, I actually had one mountain joke that I wanted to give to you as a last parting gift here, because we always do the table last, because it's so Nedly, and I know that you would really take, you know, some value from this one, okay? So, you know the mountain died when the Red Viper poisoned him, right? But Death just hasn't built up the courage yet to tell him. And that's why he's not really dead. Yeah.
I do not want to acknowledge any of these with an actual response.